Well, I'm Sue and I am an alcoholic, and I am really thrilled to be here. I haven't heard newcomers share like that in a long time, and it's very moving. It really, really is humbling and moving and courageous. And I actually am remembering that first introduction that I made 31 years ago. So congratulations. It's such a I say this often about how courageous sobriety is, how it is, I think that I walk around being a very proud sober woman because I know what it takes to not flow with the pack or be part of what everybody else is doing, or to stand alone in my own truth, or to do what is good for me and not do what everybody else around me is doing, and to make some authentic decisions that make me stand out a little bit from everyone else. And it takes a lot to do that. And I am very aware that I've done that for such a long time. And I think it's helped me have my long-term sobriety because I have this sort of quiet pride that I'm going against everything that I want to do. I'm like everybody else is doing something to sort of liquid courage, or to take the edge off, or to fit in, or to do all the things that I used alcohol for so many years. And that I don't do that and haven't for such a long time is really extraordinary. And I think we all very proud of each other and proud of ourselves. And I think that's where there's also that sort of connection that we have, where we meet people from all over the world, and we all have that one thing that we know that we've done, which is against our natural way of being, which is to find a solution to deal with everything that we have had to deal with. And the solution for me was alcohol for many, many, many years. I did have other solutions before alcohol, because my life was unmanageable long before I picked up a drink or drug. So when I heard in my first AA meetings that my life is unmanageable and I'm powerless, I knew that my life was unmanageable. My life was unmanageable since I was a little girl. I also, this is the these are sort of feels like tips of why I've got long-term sobriety. And I think one of them was to admit, which is the very, very first thing that we are asked to do, which is admit that we are powerless and that our lives are unmanageable. And that's something that no one can do for you. No one can admit for you. And until you know that there is something wrong, with your drinking, with your thinking, with the way that you're operating in the world, that all is not well, until you can admit that all is not well, there's nothing like really anyone can help you with, because there's something that happens when you go, I can't manage. Now, I think where I was lucky is that I knew I wasn't managing. And so when I came into my AA meeting and they told me, you're not managing, I said, I know. It was like, of course I know this. And I was felt acknowledged. I felt believed. I felt that I was the first time ever that I could just say this, because the lengths that I had gone to pretend that I was managing for as many years that I did, and to have the ability to be able to say in a room that I'm not managing, and then please help me, and then I'll do whatever you say, was something I'd been looking for many, many years. So I do think that that is something that made me lucky, is that the day that I came in and heard, your life is unmanageable, you're powerless, you cannot control your drinking, everything is out of control, and there is help, and there are other people who are the same as you, and they've all got some help. And I heard people's experience strength, and I heard this is what it was like, this is what I did to change me, and this is what what I'm like now. And I don't know if I was that desperate or if I drank the Kool-Aid or if, but I bought in on it immediately, absolutely immediately. This was like, I want this. I just was, I knew that the promises that they were making were things that I somehow believed might be possible for me. And if they said that these are the things that you have to do to get these blessings, it didn't, I got excited about it. It didn't feel, I was like, I sat up. Someone at that first meeting said that they would sponsor me. I should call them at 5:45 the following morning. I was up at like 5:30. I don't remember sitting cross-legged in my bed, watching the time, watching every minute so that I could make that call. I wanted it. And I've never stopped wanting it, never stopped loving it. And I love being sober. I love AA, and I've never stopped. And I wish that for I wish that if that was a shift of perspective or a shift of that this is only better and never worse. It's just because I believed that addiction and alcoholism is progressive, and I proved it. It was getting worse and worse and worse. I proved it. So when they said it will never get better, it will always get worse, I believed it. So then they said, and if you do these things, it will always get better, and it has always got better. Now, that's not to say that I haven't had life on life's terms. Have had a lot of loss. I've lost my parents. I lost a relationship. I had breast cancer. I had chemo and radiation. I've had treatment. I've had a lot of things in sobriety. And I will say that when I was diagnosed with cancer, and a doctor said, this is going to be the worst experience you've ever had in your life. My sponsor said, oh, he doesn't know what the worst thing that's ever happened in your life is. And it certainly wasn't the worst thing that ever happened in my life, because the things that had happened prior to sobriety were things that I was completely out of control of. I did by myself. I had severe anxiety and panic. I was trying to figure things out, and they were all things that were unmanageable. I never had health insurance. I never had support. I never had guidance. I never had friends. I never had a way that since then, whatever I've had to go through has been with the community that has carried me in ways that is revolutionary. We do not see this. You will not see this where people help just because it's what we do. That's it. Why are you helping me? Because this is what we do. I mean, there is something that is so insane that we sit and say, call me, call me, call me, I'll help you. And people don't call, but if you do, there is this understanding that Bill W. had in a hospital bed, that he, this to me is the biggest epiphany of AA. There's so many, but this to me is the one that struck me and has never changed, was that he understood that the only way to stay sober was to help another drunk. And then there's this movement of people where one drunk helps another because it actually helps us. And so instead of like the people pleasing altruistic way that I was, I'm going to help you, I'm going to help you, I'm going to help you, which meant I just helped and helped at the deficit of myself, from a depleted space where I just thought that my role was just to help you all the time, but I didn't realize or admit that the reason why I'm helping you is because I am getting something from it. And that is something that is so contrary to what people pleasing or what service usually is about, is that service, what we understood is service is just, I'm going to be a charitable person that's going to help you. But this idea that service helps us is mind blowing. The more service I do, the more freedom I have. The more freedom I have from the bondage of self, service is freedom from the bondage of self, where I knew that I had a life for many reasons, not of my fault, that I was in such a survival mode that all I could think about was, am I okay and how am I going to be okay? And then to recognize that as I am of service, that's where I find my self-esteem and my dignity and my worthiness. And so the more of service I am, I start to know that I actually have a power to impact people's lives in a way that is that when you see someone's lights go on, or you see that your experience might have benefited others, no matter how far down the scale we are, that I could possibly benefit others just by being an example, not by hurting myself or giving from a place of deprivation, but giving from a place of abundance, of that I am so full. I have so much in my life that all I want to do is give it away. I mean, like I don't even know how to keep it because I feel so blessed with as much as I have that I just want to give it away. And that cycle that we all do, one helping another, is, I mean, look at this, where so 122 people from all over the world sit together every single day. It is mind-blowing, for fun and for free. Not nobody's making a cent. There is no leaders. There's no one benefiting except for whatever you want. And I have thrived because of it. I've just thrived because of those principles, because of a way of living that you know, when I heard the set aside prayer this morning, I mean now, just when I read it, I thought about that sobriety. If one thinks that sobriety is giving up drinking, I think that's a problem because people are white knuckling. And how am I going to live happy, joyous? How am I going to be happy? How am I going to live and have fun without the alcohol? And I think that's very, very hard. And I think it's a struggle. I wasn't caught up in that. I understood this thing that if I set aside everything I think I know, and I'm on this path of discovery that is far beyond what any high or drunk could give, which is just how I'm going to open my mind of new ideas and new perceptions about myself and about the world and about others. And what I've discovered in this journey of first of all knowing myself and then knowing you and then knowing the world in ways that I don't think that there are many people who are able to it. It's I get criticized a lot where people who come from different points of view will go, "Oh, Sue, you and your rose-colored glasses," and they don't like it. It's because it is the idea that I'm not being realistic about the economy, about the world, about my situation, about people's situations. And I think that we have a way of taking action and then allowing more to be revealed, and knowing that I'm enough and it's enough and I'm satisfied, that I do actually see the world in a way that no matter whatever's gonna happen, I can handle situations that used to baffle me. I am able to know that in my world, from where I came from, with so much panic and anxiety and fear, and that I can know on the general that all is well in my world. And I am, there was a lot that didn't work out in my life. I didn't, I mean, because of the choices in my life, I never married and I never had kids, and I really wish I would have, but that was choice, not choice, because I couldn't have made any different choices. But I did wake up 30 years, the prime years of my life, and I woke up 30 years, and they couldn't have children, and I was in different situations. I mean, the years, I don't know what happened to 30 years of my life. I don't know what happened. And so there are things that didn't work out that I would have wished for, to be pregnant, to birth a child, to have a partner, which hasn't worked out. But all is well in my world. All is really well in my world. It's the real truth. I'm okay. And there's some other things I've thought of talking to newcomers. I am from South Africa for most of my life. I got sober in LA later, like 5 minutes?
5 minutes. Yep.
So I got sober later, much later, and when I came to LA, and that was all God's will for me, because I came here to do a conference. I never went back. I stayed here illegal. I won a green card in a lottery. There were so many things that happened that were not part of my plan or what I would have wished for, but I hit a terrible bottom in LA, because it doesn't matter what it. I hit a terrible bottom in LA, and then I found this glorious sobriety and myself in a way that I would never ever in South Africa. So there are things that when we have to have the courage to change, it doesn't mean that I have to change by moving so many million miles away. But I even say this, like, we have to change the chair in your house that you sit on every night. Throw the chair out, like put it on the side of the street. And it's the chair. It's wanting to set aside everything that you think you know, and then to embark on this new idea of me and of the world, and to understand that I'll never be able to go into this new thing if I'm mind altered. So I can't be mind altered anymore, because it's not going to give me the clarity of how to make choices and to be able to say yes to the opportunities that are being. So I have to not be mind altered. And then I have to take a leap of faith where the higher power must come in, or whatever faith it is, because I am moving away from what I know and I'm going to everything that I don't know. So I don't know what is going to be revealed, and I don't know. I know I can't go back. I know that I can't go back. And I know that if I pick up a drink, this all stops. All the miracles, all the opportunity, all the possibility stops, because then things are not well. So I have to stop doing the same thing over and over, which is coming out of denial. And when we talk about the rigorous honesty is about, I know that I can't have one drink. I know that I can't do this, because it always results in the same thing. I didn't have to go relapse to do that, because I had done it 100 times. I did not have to. And I just want to say, because I know my time is up, that I want to give you newcomers or people who are going through this again permission to actually really enjoy this. It does not have to be hard. It doesn't. I've had the time of my life from Robert's enthusiasm, from my service. From day one, I never went into treatment or anything. I went into an AA room. I went to a meeting every single day, like you are doing, 365 days, every day, every day. And nobody made me, so I went on my own accord. And my best friends are from AA. I just love being sober, and I love the principles, and there are things I don't love, and that's okay too. I don't have to love every meeting, and I don't have to love everything, and I don't like the words character defects, and I don't like there's certain things that I don't want to say that I have a part in everything, because as a child I didn't have a part in everything. But the transformation of just listening every day to someone share their experience, strength, and hope, what it was like, what they did, and what it's like now, I've never got sick of. I can listen to these stories over and over and over again. I've listened to thousands of stories. I share thousands of stories, and I am impacted by my judgment, my setting aside my idea of what I thought that person's life was like. Listen to what they've done with their lives and how their lives have been nothing like I could have ever imagined, nothing like my life I could ever have imagined. And then seeing myself in a place where it's so dramatically different and I am happy, joyous, and free. I'm just really very happy and very happy to be here this Sunday afternoon. So thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Sue. You're one of those speakers. I could listen to you for days.